A drunken cowboy bursts through the doors of New Mexico's opulent Montezuma Hotel in 1882, guns blazing. Standing in his path, a fastidious Englishman in a crisp suit. "My name is Fred Harvey. I run this place." When the cowboy mocks him, Harvey physically pins him down, demanding civility. Impressed by this unexpected display of grit, the cowboy declares Harvey a gentleman before sitting down to what he calls the best breakfast of his life. This moment captures everything about the man who would revolutionize American dining, not through compromise, but through uncompromising standards that transformed the lawless frontier into a place where even cowboys learned to use napkins. Today, Fred Harvey's name has faded into obscurity, yet his influence permeates every corner of American hospitality. He was Ray Kroc before McDonald's existed, J.W. Marriott before hotel chains became ubiquitous. His revolutionary business didn't just feed travelers, it civilized an entire region, introduced America's first major female workforce, and created the Southwest tourism industry from scratch. Unlike modern chains that lower standards to match local expectations, Harvey did the opposite. He brought European elegance to desert outposts, proving that excellence could thrive anywhere with enough determination. His vision of America, where excellent food, impeccable service, and cultural appreciation were available to all, continues to shape our expectations of what hospitality should be. Fred Harvey's obsession with perfection was forged in childhood humiliation. At 8, he watched his father, Charles, a struggling tailor, declared a pauper in a London bankruptcy court in 1843. His mother periodically abandoned them with a coachman, leaving Fred to navigate poverty and instability. These wounds fueled a lifelong need to prove his worth through impeccable standards. At 17, Fred sailed to New York in 1853 with £2. He started as a dishwasher at Smith & McNell's restaurant, absorbing everything about operations. Within 18 months, he worked his way to cook, inspired by nearby Delmonico's, America's first full-service restaurant. After his mother's death in 1855, Fred opened a St. Louis restaurant with William Doyle. When his Confederate sympathizing partner absconded with their savings, Fred was penniless at 26. His wife, Anne, died at 27 in childbirth. He remarried seamstress Barbara, Sally, more practical than romantic. When both sons died of scarlet fever in 1865, Fred had lost everything, manifesting in chronic headaches and neurasthenia, nervous exhaustion. As a railroad ticket agent in Leavenworth, Kansas, Fred endured countless stomach-turning depot meals. West of the Mississippi, most food came from cans. Without refrigeration, fresh meat could kill you. But Fred had experienced the legendary Logan House Hotel on the Pennsylvania Railroad, where excellent cuisine was served along remote tracks. He became convinced Western travelers would demand better and that he could provide it. The breakthrough came with the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railroad. Though small, just 560 miles of Kansas track, the Santa Fe had a reputation for frontier thinking. Fred negotiated an exceptional deal, a rent-free 20-seat lunchroom in the Topeka Depot, with the railroad covering utilities and transportation. With no written contract, just a handshake, Fred brought in his wife Sally and trusted employee Guy Potter. When they opened in January 1876, Fred personally greeted the first customer, 19-year-old train fireman Shep Smith. After serving him coffee, Fred acknowledged the lunchroom's limitations but promised, "I'm going to make the coffee and food so good that the boys will come no matter how far they have to walk." Fred's genius was creating an impossible experience. In Florence, Kansas, population 800, he hired celebrity chef William H. Phillips away from Chicago's prestigious Palmer House. Together, they created something unprecedented, a boutique hotel and destination restaurant in the middle of nowhere, with standards rivaling New York or London. They upgraded everything: Irish linens from Belfast, china and stemware from London, silver from Sheffield. Phillips revolutionized the menu with ambitious European-style preparations of local game. When London correspondent Samuel Nugent Townshend arrived, he declared the food splendid, with meals suited to the most exigent or Epicurean taste. The Florence Hotel became so successful that rooms were constantly sold out. But quality at this level required solving impossible logistics. Fred pioneered an entirely new business model, large-scale centralized purchasing for restaurant chains. He contracted with Kansas City's premier meatpacking firm for an entire year's worth of tenderloin steaks at 12.5 cents per pound. This dramatically improved Western dining, introducing many to properly cooked rare meat. One bewildered cowboy, confronted with a rare steak, quipped, "I've seen many a critter be hurt worse than that and get well." Fred was teaching the frontier not just what to eat, but how to eat it. After firing his male waitstaff in Raton, New Mexico, Fred hired young white single women from Kansas, a bold move in a West where men outnumbered women by a million. Among the first was 18-year-old Minnie O'Neill, who learned strict rules: chaperone dormitory living, plain black dress with white apron, no makeup, 12-hour shifts 6 days weekly, and contracts requiring 6 months of singlehood. The experiment succeeded spectacularly. Unlike exploited mill workers, Harvey girls enjoyed unprecedented freedom, decent wages, exotic travel, and independence their mothers never imagined. To Western men, they represented respectable young women, becoming subjects of songs and daydreams. As William Allen White observed, they civilized the West as certainly as did the men who laid the railroad tracks. Fred codified his standards through elaborate memos covering everything from philosophy to practicalities: orange juice squeezed after ordering, bread sliced exactly 3/8 inch thick, the cup code for beverages. He demanded standardization while encouraging creativity, allowing managers to buy local ingredients shipped to other locations. His legendary unannounced inspections created consistency across thousands of miles while maintaining responsiveness to local tastes. When the Santa Fe Railroad expanded into Chicago, fare wars threatened stability. New president Alan Manvel tried replacing Fred's meal stops with dining cars, breaking their handshake agreement. Fred sued, revealing his empire: 24 locations across 5 states, 400 employees, 5,000 daily meals. Despite the railroad's power, he won a permanent injunction, proving handshake deals mattered when backed by integrity. As the 1890s progressed, Fred's health deteriorated. A London surgeon diagnosed colon cancer. He returned to America, distributing his wealth through gifts to avoid inheritance taxes. On February 9, 1901, he died at 65. The Emporia Gazette eulogized that he has done more to promote good cooking than any man in America. Son Ford maintained his father's standards while expanding dramatically. 3 years after Fred's death, the company operated 60 depot restaurants and 8 trackside hotels. Ford established dairy farms, pioneered milk safety standards, and developed the Grand Canyon as a tourist destination. In 1905, El Tovar opened on the canyon rim with electric lights, steam heat, and private bathrooms, extraordinary luxuries for such a remote location. Across from El Tovar stood Mary Coulter's Hopi House, an authentic Pueblo replica where native artisans lived and worked. Coulter created what became Santa Fe style. The Fred Harvey Indian Department won grand prizes at the 1904 St. Louis World's Fair, recognition that balanced commerce with genuine respect for indigenous culture. World War I brought both pride and anxiety to Fort Harvey. His son Freddie joined the American Air Service, while Ford led Kansas City's Red Cross Drive. Fred Harvey restaurants fed tens of thousands of soldiers daily at discounted rates, demonstrating private enterprise serving public good. The 1920s brought prosperity: urban restaurants in Chicago, the Indian Detours luxury tour program. But the 1929 crash ended it. During the Depression, Harvey houses became refuges where the hungry found free meals. Company policy forbade letting anyone leave hungry. To maintain this generosity, Fred Harvey closed locations for the first time in its 54-year history. Tragedy struck repeatedly. Ford Harvey died in 1928 from influenza complications. His son Freddie and wife Betty were killed when their private plane crashed in 1936, triggering a bitter family struggle for control. Though MGM's 1946 film, The Harvey Girls, starring Judy Garland, became a cultural phenomenon, the real Fred Harvey struggled to adapt to automobile travel and interstate highways. By 1966, the company went public, but within 2 years was sold to a Hawaiian conglomerate. The 92-year relationship with the Santa Fe ended. The empire built on handshakes and white tablecloths had finally succumbed to forces even Fred Harvey's perfectionism couldn't control. Fred Harvey's empire left enduring marks across the Southwest. El Tovar still welcomes Grand Canyon guests, La Fonda remains Santa Fe's premier hotel, and Mary Coulter's architectural masterpieces stand as testaments to visionary hospitality. Though his name has faded, Harvey's legacy lives in every restaurant chain, promising consistent quality, and every hotel celebrating regional culture. Harvey's accomplishments were revolutionary, America's first nationwide hospitality brand, pioneering standardized chain restaurants, the country's first major female workforce, and introducing millions to Southwestern culture. The Harvey girls helped settle the American West. Mary Coulter created a distinctly American design aesthetic, celebrating indigenous influences over European traditions. The Fred Harvey Indian Department played a complex but crucial role in preserving Native American arts when government policy actively suppressed indigenous culture. Most importantly, Harvey built his empire on exceeding expectations rather than merely meeting them. In an era of fraudulent business practices, he proved that quality, consistency, and integrity were foundations of lasting success. His insistence on maintaining high standards everywhere, from metropolitan centers to remote outposts, democratized fine dining and professional service for ordinary Americans. When we enjoy consistent quality at chain restaurants or experience professional service from diverse workforces, we're benefiting from Harvey's innovations. His story reminds us that excellence isn't about location or resources, it's about refusing to compromise.